Welcome to Level 10 Mastery with Ben Lawler. On this podcast, we interview the best and brightest in all walks of life. By doing this, we help you, our listener, become the best version of yourself. Buckle up and enjoy the ride. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Level 10 Mastery. This morning, we have a very special guest, Mr. Gene Dobbs Bradford. Gene has been the president and CEO of Jazz St. Louis since February 1999. During that time, he's built the organization's contributed and earned income from $375,000 to over $3 million today. He's also led the organization through an $8.5 million capital campaign to develop the Harold and Dorothy Stewart Center for Jazz. He's overseen the expansion of Jazz St. Louis programming and education that's reached over 170,000 students. Mr. Bradford has received many honors, including the 2018 Arts Award for Excellence, St. Louis Business Journal's 40 Under 40, Most Influential People in St. Louis, Inclusive Leadership Awards, as well as being named the 2014 Nonprofit Executive of the Year by the St. Louis American Foundation, an Excellence in Leadership Civic Engagement, Lifetime Achievement Award by the Webster Groves Art Commission. Under his direction, Jazz St. Louis has received the 2006 Excellence in Arts Award from the Education Council, 2011 Missouri Arts Award for What's Right in the Region. And its flagship program, Jazz at the Bistro, was named one of the top 10 great jazz clubs in the country by Wynton Marsalis and USA Today. Gene, thanks for being on this morning, brother.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So starting out, tell us what's new and exciting in your world.
Wow, what's new and exciting? Well, one of the things that I think I'm most excited about right now is we've started a program. It's now in its second year, and it's called the Jazz Academy. So as you may have heard, Jazz St. Louis is a not-for-profit organization, and we present the finest jazz musicians in the world. We've had everybody from Harry Connick Jr., Diana Krall, Wynton Marsalis, Branford Marsalis, Al Jarreau, Dave Sanborn. We've had you know, the top names in jazz, but we also have education and outreach activities that reach about 10,000 students every year, and some of those programs are programs that expose students to music, like our Emerson Jazz in the Schools program.
Okay.
But we also have programs that that actually train musicians, training the next generation of great St. Louis jazz musicians. We actually had two alumni of our program a couple Saturdays ago were performing in New York City in two of the top jazz clubs. So one was playing with Kurt Elling Jazz at Lincoln Center.
Okay.
And then the other was performing with Terrell Stafford at the Village Vanguard.
Wow.
So,
and these are two former students.
Two former students. So one of the programs that we've developed now is something for students in middle school called the Jazz Academy. And the idea of the Jazz Academy is to try to help students in middle school so that when they get to high school, they're on a more even footing. So that program is, which is primarily for students in the St. Louis City.
Yes.
We give them lessons, ensemble rehearsals. We feed them while they're here. We have somebody on to help with homework. So it's a real holistic approach.
That is awesome.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that I think I'm most excited about. I guess the other thing that I wouldn't know if I'm really excited about it, and it hasn't quite set in yet, but, you know, as I said, I've been here since 1999, so I did celebrate my 20th anniversary with the place.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much. You know, I've never thought I would have been any place for 20 years, but it's like every 3 years, the business is different. You know, you've got new challenges, you've got growth, so it hasn't felt like, you know, it's, if I had done 20 years and we were still the same as it was when I started, then I'd feel like like I hadn't really done much in my life. But I'm pretty happy with it. We've had a pretty good ride here, and, you know, I don't I don't have any plans to do anything different in the near future, unless that Powerball comes through.
Well, speaking of education, Gene, take us back to the beginning. Mm-hmm. How did you kind of get started in music? Was there a mentor early on, or what was mm-hmm. that first experience for you in music?
Yeah, so I started off playing in elementary school. I started playing viola because I was always a bit bigger than most of the kids in the class. And the violins were a little too small for my hands, so they said, why don't you play viola? And I said, that's fine.
Yeah.
So I played that for a couple of years. And then when I got to middle school, I stopped playing viola. But towards the end of the of my time there, my hand, well, I was playing viola, but my hand started outgrowing that.
Yes.
So the teacher there, Don Jones, said, why don't we move you up to the bass violin, because, you know, we're just going to skip right over the cello. And so I started playing bass. I played bass for a year, and then when we went on to high school, I didn't play anymore. But I wanted to be in the school's jazz band, the high school jazz band. And so I went and I talked to the band director, because I knew that their bass player, the person who was playing bass in the jazz band, was leaving.
Okay.
And
so
I said,
there's an opportunity.
Yeah,
there's
so I said, yeah. So I said, I would love to play bass. And he said, well, you know, if you're going to do that, you have to play in the wind ensemble, too. We didn't have an orchestra at our school. So, and actually, a bass violin is a common instrument to have in a wind ensemble.
Is it really?
Yeah, it helps to fill in the low end.
Okay.
So the band teacher that we had there, his name was Louis Dutrow, and he just last year retired. We had a big celebration for him. He retired after like 37 years.
Now,
he was kind of young when he started, but he was just a really great teacher who inspired us. We had a great group, and we were really challenged to make the best music that we could. And they have these like solo and ensemble festivals, so you go to those. And I'm going to say we used to play a grade six, and in this that was like the hardest, most difficult repertoire.
Okay.
And then we would get, we would get high rating. We'd get like the top ratings on that. So that was like a really big deal, is to go to one of these festivals playing really challenging music and doing really well at it. Now, at the time, too, the band was like a family. I still am very close to, all my friends who were in the band with me at that time. It was so good to see them at the retirement party, because, I mean, people came from all over the country.
Yeah. How many people came in for this?
There were hundreds of people there.
That's awesome.
Hundreds of people there. And parents, too,
What a great celebration of awesome. Achievement.
Well, he gave us all a lot, right? So you give, you get what you put out. And he was, he put out a lot. And I loved, we would go on tour, right? We went to you do your school trips. We went up to Toronto one time. We went up to Montreal to do some festivals, and there were like competitions, and we would enjoy trying to coordinate the loading of the buses and everything. And I remember one time my best friend Steve and I, we got these walkie talkies, and we were going to try to coordinate the effort by having let's say, okay, now it's time to send up the bass drums, right?
Yes.
But the range on them wasn't that good, so that totally. Well, we sure looked good. Sure looked good with
absolutely.
Our headphones. Our
you
headsets
felt like
on.
You knew what you were doing.
Yeah. But, that was kind of the thing. I really enjoyed that aspect of the business. I really enjoyed sort of making sure things were taken care of, getting the show on the road. And when I went up to visit a friend of mine who was at the Eastman School of Music, and really I think I just wanted to get out of the house and go have an adventure.
Sure.
And
get out and explore.
Yep. And so I went up to... I went up to Rochester to visit him, and I just fell in love with the place because the folks there were playing music, and to me, I said it sounded just like it did on the record. So I said, this is where I want to go. So I came back and I told Mr. Dutra that that's what I wanted to do, and he said, well, if that's the case, we need to get you a teacher. So yes. He like sat down there right away, called a couple friends, and he got me set with this teacher, Owen Cummings, who was a bass player in the Baltimore Symphony.
Yes.
And Owen, man, he helped me get my stuff together. And after about 9 months of study with him, I went out and auditioned for James Vandermark at the Eastman School of Music. And he said, you know, you've done a lot. You've made a lot of progress with the time that you've had.
Yeah.
So he accepted me as a student, and I got to go to Eastman, which was
very cool.
Fantastic. It was a very, very prestigious music school, if I do say so myself.
Man, incredible. So what was that like? Walk us through your experience there at Eastman.
Oh, man, Eastman was great. I had a lot of good friends, made a lot of good music. One of the issues that I had was that I wanted to play jazz too, because this whole thing started because I wanted to play jazz.
Yeah.
I did play jazz in the high school band, but I wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a very good jazz player because I hadn't really been working at it that long.
Yes.
And so I ended up being, they had like four jazz bands that you could be in, and I was in like the sort of beginning level, right?
The opening range.
That's right. You know, and I always with dreams of moving up. So the second group was really hip because they did much more appealing repertoire, and it was led by Bill Dobbins, who was just an incredible. He's like a walking encyclopedia of jazz. So I wanted to be in there, but the problem was that when I was a sophomore, this freshman came in who was actually not a student at the Eastman School. Eastman is a part of the University of Rochester, not many people know that. But he came in and he was like, he blew everybody away. So they said, well, we've got him for 4 years. So, you know, he sort of locked up those positions.
Yeah.
But this guy, Tim Lefebvre was his guy's name. And he actually plays now with Tedeschi Trucks and a whole bunch of other people. He played on David Bowie's last album.
Wow.
So yeah, he worked a little bit harder at it.
Yeah. Wow.
But
that is awesome. So tell me this, in your opinion, how does a person become the best at their craft, you know, whether it's music or business?
Well, you have to, they say, well, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? And it's practice, practice, practice. I mean, I think that it's a daily thing. It's always trying to figure out how to do things best. I think that the idea of mastery is actually an illusion, because I think the minute that you think you really understand something, mm-hmm. that's the time when you're starting to go downhill.
That's right. You're always growing. You're
always growing.
Improving.
So,
I heard somebody say recently in life, there's only one way to coast,
mm-hmm.
and that's downhill. you're always striving for that next level.
That's right. So one time I was watching Herbie Hancock, right, because that's one of the things that you get to do in my business is you get to see them, you know, going through their rehearsals or something.
Sure.
So I was like, oh, man, I'm going to go see Herbie Hancock rehearse because we were presenting up at the Two Hill.
Right.
And I got there, and I watched him, and for about 2 hours, he rehearsed this 8 measures of a song called Watermelon Man,
mm-hmm.
which is a song he wrote, I think it was 1969.
Okay.
Right? And he kept trying to find something. He didn't quite know what it was. He would just, they would play it, they would try something, he would stop, he would think, he would go back, they would try something else, they would try it again, he would sit down, he'd stop and he'd think. And I thought to myself, here is an artist practicing to get this one passage right on something that if he didn't do that, all of his fans would just be like, oh, the maestro. You know, it's like you're doing, you know, because if he had played it exactly the way he played it, on the album. Mm-hmm. People would have been happy with that.
Yes.
But for him, he's the master, right? Well, yeah. I call him the master, but sure. I bet you he would call himself the student because he's still trying to figure things out.
He's still working on it.
And that's why he's Herbie Hancock. That's why
he's
revered, right?
That's right.
And you know, I see bands all the time, you know, playing in small clubs and they every week, you know, it comes in, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
And it works for them because, you know, they have a group that wants to hear that and they give them what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, that's kind of where that's as far as that's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that's not a lot of fun.
Sure.
Right. But if you really want to make a statement, you know, you have to break out of that and you have to start thinking about who you are as an artist and what statement do you want to make? And yeah, you can go back and you can do other people's arrangements and you can play other people's material. But if you don't make it your own, if you don't find a way to make it your own, then you're not really getting, you're not really giving as much of yourself as you should to your audience.
Mm-hmm. So. Gene, where did jazz start for you? Was there a moment that you recall, an album or a show that you saw where you're like, yes, jazz?
I think, you know, he always seen jazz as being cool. You know, it's funny when you listen to music in the 80s, like 80s pop, you still hear a lot of horns in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's still got that link to the big band, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. and then as sometime in the 90s, that sort of
fizzled out, yeah.
But, you know, but I remember the middle school band coming over to play for us when I was in elementary school, and I remember being really impressed and thinking those guys were really cool. And when I was in jazz band in high school, I had a friend named Steve Swan, and he was very knowledgeable about jazz, and he would introduce us to things like John Coltrane, Giant Steps, like Ellington Live at Newport. He was just like our musical, he was like musical guide. And, you know, just listening to all this music, it was just, you know, something I fell in love with. But I love all kinds of music. I love, you know, classical music too. I love the blues. I like anything that's good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even some country stuff, I'm not... you know, you hear somebody like Willie Nelson, man. That guy's a serious musician. He's a great
artist.
He's got
his own thing.
Yeah,
his own voice. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. Musical and
otherwise. And, you know, going back to education, what are, in your opinion, Gene, what are some of the benefits of musical education at a young age?
Well, music education is not just about playing the instrument. One thing that it teaches you very quickly is that if you want to achieve anything, that you're going to need to have some discipline.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to need to put the time in. Sure. Nothing comes from having the instrument sitting in its case. You got to break it out, and you have to engage in it every day, and you have to do it consistently. Better to do it for a little bit of time every day than a whole lot of time one day a week.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches you about teamwork. You know, when you are in an orchestra or you're in a band, you have to work with all the other members there. You
sure.
have to come prepared. You have to be ready to participate. You have to be ready to fill your role. It teaches you about cooperation, especially in a jazz setting, because when you're on the bandstand, everybody has an equal voice. And even though you may be the leader of the band,
mm-hmm.
when the music's actually happening, you have to negotiate with everybody else because
right.
people can take it in different directions. This is why it's very important to find the right people that you want to play with. So so it teaches you a lot of things that aren't just about, you know, music or trying to get a job in the music industry.
Sure. But it sounds like almost... emotional development as well.
Quite so.
You're dealing with people.
Quite so, and that's one of the things we hear a lot from the parents of our students is they talk about the benefit to their students beyond music. They talk about how it's really helped them to grow as individuals.
Sure.
And that's one of the more rewarding things.
Right. Well, it seems like this day and age, you know, people want instant gratification. You know, they want something right now.
Oh, yeah.
They want it today. But with music, you know, it takes time.
You have to work at it.
effort. Yeah. You have to work at it over the course of time.
And I remember, that's the thing. And two, I think that there have been a lot of times when I've had, you know, you get a big gig, right? And like the Botanical Garden, right? That was like a big gig for us. So, you know, here in St. Louis, the Missouri Botanical Garden has this festival called the Whitaker Music Festival. Every Wednesday in the summer, they have local bands. It's like 6,000 people, you know, go down to that. So when I got a chance to play there, I was like, this is going to be the greatest concert that, you know, that I've ever done. And, you know, and so I'm going to put all the cards on the table. And if I never do another concert, this will be the one. To say. And I did that. And then, you know, the first thing is like, oh, I should have done this.
Yeah, you know. You can always critique.
Always.
Right. I've done better.
Always.
I've done differently.
And the thing is, you know, it's like you're never going to, I don't think, you know, so. And it bothered me. They bothered me for a while because I was like, wow, man, you know, there was my big shot. But then I said, well, there's going to be another time.
Sure.
And the other thing, too, is that I said, well, you know, it's all about the journey. It's all about trying to find something that is really authentic. And, you know, I think that really freed me a lot to say, you know, you don't have to worry about it being perfect. You just have to worry about doing your best. And that's what I try to do now is and not put so much pressure on that this is going to be the one.
It sounds like it's more about the process than it is about the event. So
and perpetuating Curtis, that.
Absolutely. Curtis, we were talking about this a little bit before, but Gene, what would you say between, you know, business and music? Are there any similarities there? Are there any things that you learned from your musical background that have carried over into running a successful business?
Well, you know, I went into orchestra management straight out of college. So right after I graduated, I went into the American Symphony Orchestra League. It's now the League of American Symphony Orchestras. I went into their fellowship program and worked with the Baltimore Symphony, the Cleveland Orchestra, and the New Mexico Symphony. After that, I got my first job out in Honolulu as a production manager for the Honolulu Symphony, and I did that for 3 years.
Right.
And then I came here to St. Louis to be the director of operations for the St. Louis Symphony. And so, and then 5 years later, I took the job at Jazz St. Louis. Well, after a while, I think I realized that I had sort of taken the organization as far as I was going to go with just trial and error. And just like being a musician, you know, if you really want to excel at something, you need to have more than just natural aptitude.
Absolutely.
Right? Natural aptitude will help you a lot. But
that'll only take you so far.
Yeah, you need to dig in. You need to find out about the history, the best practices, the latest techniques, you know. And that's why I say, you know, if I'm going to grow any further, I need to get some more knowledge in here. I need to be approach it like I would approach music. And so I went back and got my MBA at Wash U.
Awesome.
And I think that was very, very helpful.
So tell us about that experience.
No,
going
was,
back to
oh my gosh.
School, going back to get your MBA. What
yeah,
was that like?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I was in the executive program, which met for a weekend every month. And you work with a team. And it was a great experience. My class was 50 or so awesome people, and we had a great time. We had a great rapport. It was beyond challenging. I remember when I started, I said to myself, you know, maybe after this, we'll go and get our doctorate. And then about halfway through, I said, nah, this is it. This is it. Because it was just, you know, you get home, because I still was working my job here.
Yes.
And so, you know, you're working a full-time job and going to school. And a lot of people have this. I mean, you know, you get home and you want to rest, but you got to study. And then the next night, I got to work at night. So it was crazy.
It's tough.
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
You put it all together.
Okay.
But well worth it. Well worth it, I think.
Well, it sounds like surrounding yourself with great people, you know, constantly improving, growing. Let's talk more about Jazz St. Louis.
Sure.
What's the mission here at
Jazz? The mission of Jazz St. Louis is to lead our community in advancing the uniquely American art of jazz through live performance, education, and community engagement. And we do that through our flagship program, our Jazz St. Louis season, But we also have, as I mentioned before, our education outreach programs that reach over 10,000 students a year. So
I love it. Now, how can people get involved in the St. Louis community?
If people are involved, they can go visit us on our website at jazzstl.org, and they can also call us at 314-571-6000. We have opportunities for volunteering. We do accept charitable contributions. But one thing I would just say to everybody, and this is not just for jazz, but I encourage everybody to get out and go participate in live arts experiences.
Yes.
Even if it's not music, just get up, get out. It's so easy now to just sit in front of your computer screen and watch, you know, binge watch some program. There are a lot of great programs out there. Mm-hmm. Very and movies are a very very rich art form as well. However, there are artists out in your community that need your support. You're not going to have the actors that you see on Netflix if we don't have actors in those community theaters. If we don't have actors in those places like the Fox Theater. Mm-hmm. You know, we need that. And the thing about the arts experience, and I think music does it better than anything else, is it brings people together.
Right.
Right? So when you go to a place like the New Orleans Jazz Festival, and you look out on the sea, you know, of you know, 50,000 people.
There's something magical about that.
It is,
that
and experience. Everybody's come together. There aren't too many things that bring people together like that. You could say, well, sports does it, but sports doesn't really do that because people are opposed to each other, right? People are like yelling and screaming. It's a rivalry, right?
But music is more about harmony, bringing people together.
Yeah. Yep. So get out there, you know, even if it's just going down to your free local music festival in the summer or fall or in the spring, just get out there and participate, because it's one of the greatest experiences that there is.
I love it.
Great message. That's awesome. Absolutely.
So Gene, as we wrap up today, any final thoughts, any wisdom that you've maybe learned over the years that you can share with our audience out here?
Well, I would say a great piece of advice that Paul Burgett, who was the Dean of Students at the Eastman School of Music, gave me one time. He said, unless it's brain surgery and somebody asks you if you can do it, go ahead and do it, because you may not know exactly what you're doing, but you'll find out.
Absolutely.
And I think that you know, of course, you don't want it to be brain surgery. He makes sure to nobody's going to get hurt or anything.
Yeah.
But you know, if you go into something, people get so stymied by the fact that they feel inadequate to approach something. But I think if you're honest about that and you really make a sincere attempt to understand it and not try to fake it, then you're going to make that progress. So, and you'll find yourself doing things that you never thought that you could do.
I love it. And it's okay to fail. You know, I heard somebody say recently in life that you know, the only difference between an amateur and a true expert is that expert has failed more times than the amateur has even tried.
Yeah, and I think that success is actually sometimes a bit of a curse, because one, it leads to that thinking that I got this, I understand it, and two, once you have succeeded, then you start to worry too much about having the failure.
Right.
So then you start trying to shield yourself, and that's when you can also get into another spiral. So,
definitely.
You know, I think, you know, not that I would love to see more successes than failures, I will admit, but failure, if you learn something from it, I don't think it truly is.
I love it.
It's great.
Well, Gene, thank you so much for being part of the program this morning.
Thank you.
We really appreciate your time, your wisdom, and congratulations again on 20 years with Jazz St. Louis.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Level 10 Mastery. We couldn't continue our mission without your support. If you haven't already, get on iTunes and give us a review. And if you haven't been to Jazz St. Louis, get in and check out this amazing organization. Get involved with one of the top jazz clubs in the world. Until next time, get out there and be the best version of yourself.